Thanks for coming tonight. I'd like to talk with you about the relationship between suffering and liberation. And first, let's clarify what I mean when I say suffering. So there's a traditional way of what we say about what suffering is. What Buddha Shakyamuni said the first thing when he turned the Dharma wheel the first time, gave first time a teaching publicly. What he said is suffering is birth and aging and sickness and death and getting what one doesn't want or not getting what one wants and also being with those people you don't like so much and not being with those you love. I think it's kind of a general categorization, but maybe in one of those or two of those you find yourself, yeah, I know that situation, you know. Like sickness, right? Being in pain, that's definitely what we consider suffering. And, you know, getting what you don't want, like an earthquake or whatever, it's, you know. I mean, they're very universal events. And yet, they are the total seed and the fabric of our liberation. And that's what I want to talk with you about. I found it fascinating in listening to Shakyamuni Buddha talking about this topic, that he invites us who are listening to him to investigate into the core of it. And he displays many illustrations to come back to the same core. There's suffering, there's a root of suffering. So there's suffering, which is what you just talked about, you know, birth, aging, sickness, you know, getting what you don't want. And then there's a cause of it, which is thirst and craving. So first I want to see if you relate to any of what I just said. do you can right now reflect on any situation that you would say that's suffering for you? I want to speak it out loud. Anything that comes to your mind that you would say, that's suffering for me. All right?
Well, Wednesday nights kind of steer me away from my usual routine. And I'm sitting there at work at the end of the day sometimes and saying, gosh, instead of coming here, I wish I could just go home. Mm.
Mm-hmm. That there's this unease of, you know, doing something you don't want to do versus doing something that you want to do. Right. Yeah, I emphasize.
When I feel what I think is that somebody is thinking a bad thought about me.
Mm.
You know, like, a person will make a comment, a snappy comment, or a harsh comment, and I feel like, ooh.
Pain.
Ooh.
Yeah, ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yes?
Getting, being different at school and people commenting about that in a negative way.
Feeling disconnected, yeah. That's painful. Yes?
I'm not sure if this is suffering or not. Maybe you could tell me. I had a conference with a family today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not yours, but some family that comes in, or your family.
I am the teacher.
The teacher.
And student.
Family came.
We had a conference. Fairly difficult conversation. such empathy for her that I also cried. It wasn't my suffering, really, although the feelings felt the same as if it were mine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is that suffering or not?
No. I think in the definition of suffering, the cause of craving, like if your fears, and only you know, if your fears are based on feeling desperate, feeling helpless, or finding a sense of despair in the situation of not knowing how to help or not knowing how to connect or anything that pertains to your feeling, then that's suffering. But if your feeling is like you're saying, kind of you see her pain and you can empathize with your pain, that's not based on, it's, there's no craving there. And basically you're getting ahead of my talk.
He's good at that.
He's good at that. Yeah, that's a big difference, yeah. And it's a beautiful example. So let's keep that in mind when we keep investigating. So for the Buddha to reach all the diverse experiences and all of your diverse experiences of what suffering is, or your personal suffering, he put out teachings of various teachings. And I'm pulling out one right now, talking about, if I talk about the six realms of existence, there are six realms called, like, it's kind of a cosmology that Buddha put out there of the 18 hell realms, right? And then there's hungry ghost realm and animal realms and humans, and then two realms of with gods, different kinds of gods. Ones are jealous and the other ones are just delighted. And they show up in various teaching formats, those six realms, and they're ultimately speaking, they're based on mind. They're our mind's projection. But the being in that realm might not necessarily know that. Or let's say if the being knows that this is just one's mind rejection, that's a form of liberation right there. But most of the time, especially if you were to enter a hell realm, you might not know it because you don't have any time to know anything. You're just tormented with tremendous amount of agony and pain and being cut into pieces and tremendous amount of heat and fire and tremendous torture unimaginable for us right now. And I'm bringing this up not to scare you or myself, even though it's really scary if you really start imagining this realm, but also to point out that Buddha Shakyamuni, who is a Buddha of who gave all these teachings that we are now enjoying, he started his career in exactly that hell realm. So you were talking about some form of suffering, and so he was in his suffering at that time, being a hell being, being in a tremendous blazing cauldron, pushing a cart together with a friend, whatever this cart contained, corpses or whatever. I mean, this is like an unimaginable, painful hell situation, and he was part of, he was in the hierarchy high up there somewhere as a hell being, and had the job of pulling a cart or whatever. And so the sentinel, the guard, came over and started torturing his friend who was pulling the cart with him. And he, as a hell being, he got there, first of all, out of hatred, right? So being in hell is a contribution of hate. All actions have consequences. So there he was, his friend was being killed or tortured or whatever, like anybody around him probably. But this moment, somehow the conditions came together that he had a moment of empathy. He had a moment of warmth and he wanted to protect his friend. And of course he got killed right away from the guard because, you know, empathy is not a big thing in to be welcomed in hell realms. But he got killed right away, but he had immediately also higher rebirth due to his action of compassion. And that was the beginning of his career of becoming Shakyamuni Buddha many, many lifetimes later. So compassion is, in the midst of suffering, the first step to liberation. And I can hear that, especially after contemplating, you know, I mean, if you believe in hell realms or not, I'm leaving that up to you. I'm not proposing you have to. But the context of taking this teaching in helps to just at least presume you believe in it and then imagine it just as you would if you watch a horror movie, right, for that time. And that in that period of seeing this horror and feeling this horror, imagining, wow, and a person in the midst of it has space to have compassion. I mean, this is a tremendous act of a human mind to come up with. Like now here we are in the human realm, right? And like we have a moment of suffering. Like, may I say, take your example of somebody saying, you jerk to you, and it feels really painful. And then in that moment to like, you know, you're like, all your defenses are up, and you're like, all, everything goes up, and you're like, how dare this person, and why me right now, and I really don't need this today, I have enough to do, you know, like, many, many things can come up that just generate the pain of the situation even more, because it is not very nice to be called a jerk or whatever, or feel criticized or diminished in a situation. So in that situation, to come up with a moment of like, oh, you know, I have empathy for you. Sometimes not imaginable. You know, even in a human realm where no molten iron is around, right? So it is a tremendous act of training, actually, or whatever seed it takes. But I really don't understand the Pentacle Rising, right? But that it takes some training for it to arise, some intention for compassion to arise. So throwing seeds. That's what I'm talking about, basically. Suffering and compassion, or suffering and liberation, has to do with throwing the seeds for it, you know. So I only heard of one person who confesses that he is suffering right now in this instant, and I don't know how many people would raise their arm and say, well, I'm really actually suffering right now. And so right now in this moment, what's the seed to throw that an opening of the heart can happen, that an opening of warmth can happen, that not hatred, confusion, and agony is proliferated right now. So what, or in a moment to come, you might already know, oh, I'm going home and my partner is upset or whatever, or I have to go to school tomorrow, I'm facing again this difficult situation, you know, if you're not feeling connected, you know, what is it that I can do right now to throw in a possibility of an openness when this pain comes up, when this unbearable situation shows up again. There was in the Avatamsaka Sutra, that's a sutra in the second turning, and when the main teaching of Buddhism, emptiness, was already very much going on. And it's a big book that has a huge collection of various teachings. And in there is book 11 that I'm referring to. This book talks, says a Bodhisattva like you and me, whatever his name is, Bodhisattva Joe, comes up and asks Maitreya or Manjushri. Let's say Manjushri. what is it that, how is it and what is it that can come forth to an action that is, you know, not creating causes of suffering? How can one come up with an action of my body, of my speech, and of my thinking that is harmless to other beings, an action that is unshakable, you know, in the midst of whatever situation, an action that is fully, feels good, a good action, a really full action of joy or completeness or wholeness. So how does such an action come about? And the answer is, well, it's the mind. It starts with the mind, you know, and it's an action that uses one's mind properly. So it's an action that comes from a proper mind, a mind that's aligned with what we call in Buddhism enlightenment or liberation. So from that kind of mind, an action that doesn't proliferate suffering but promotes liberation is coming about. And then the whole next 20 pages go into verses. And I don't know if you're familiar with mind training verses or not, but these verses that are promoted in this book, they are verses that do exactly what Jean was doing. They are they're seeing an action, and they do wish for the best for the other person, or the best for any person. And sometimes they're not persons around, and sometimes, you know, you're just by yourself and you still brush your teeth or whatever. But that's still an action of body or mind or speech. So in that moment, you can have a wish, and that wish is for other beings to benefit. And what's the ultimate benefit but complete liberation? Well, that's kind of what this text is about. But I want to talk about in a second more, go in detail about it. But some of the verses I just want to read for you to get a taste of it. While with spouse and children, they, people, you and me, should wish that all beings be impartial towards everyone and forever give up attachment. So here you are with your loved ones, and this book is suggesting, enjoy it, you know. You're with your family, that's the greatest. And while you're with your family, wish that everybody is free of attachment, because it's helpful to be free of attachment. Or if in danger and difficulties, you and me should wish that all beings are free and unhindered wherever they go. So here you are in a situation of, you know, walking down the street at night and you feel somebody is following you. And what do? You wish that everybody would be the possibility and the right and the freedom to walk wherever they can without having to have fear. You know, you create a wholesome wish, and of course you run too. that's my favorite one. When climbing up in balconies, you know.
Do that all the time.
All the time. I mean, just like my, you know, whatever. Old stories of, you know, how people did that in the past, of climbing up in balconies and meeting your loved one mid at night or whatever. They should wish that all beings ascend the tower of truth and see through everything. So it's conjoining your action with the wish for happiness. And when these texts in these books are maybe a little, have their own language code, because they're written in the 11th century or whatever, or 8th century or whatever, this book is compiled and has a certain cosmological Buddhist background to it, you can make it up. You know, there is the beauty of, and Ani Pema just recently said in a retreat I was, this beauty of have an experience and actually knowing it's universal. Like, I was in this retreat place that was in the snow, and the suggestion or the instruction was, anytime you're getting snow in your shoes, instead of just being annoyed about it, wish that anybody would be free from the unpleasantness of having snow in your shoes. You know, just like a certain kind of connectedness. Generate that connectedness out of your situation, right? Or like if you know, you're meeting a difficult conversation or conference, wish that everybody would be free of difficulties like that, you know, like generating that wish of that you're having something and you know that other people wouldn't like it, and just share it. Tenshin Roshi said in the past of like, yeah, so you want liberation or you want to be free of self-clinging, so just wish everybody would be free of self-clinging, you know. Don't hold it just to you, you know. Be everybody be free of self-clinging. Want that. Want that everybody be liberated. You want liberation? You're coming here for, you know, company, enjoyment, inspiration, you know. Have the wish that everybody has some inspiration and company, you know. Make everything you do a generator for everybody. Just like it's kind of thinking larger, kind of more whole. And I want to do that with you. And Chani is going to help me with that because I asked him to help give you these verses and lists. Let's see. Just go all the way around. I don't know if I have enough. Maybe not cook you here. Doesn't need it. So if you get the list, you will see on the one, whatever page you think it is, the front or the back, there are five verses, and these are the traditional Soto Zen verses. And the traditional Soto Zen verses are geared towards you getting up in the morning clean. And so basically saying, you know, it's about bathing, that, you know, if you bathe, may all beings be clean. And then there also, if you brush your teeth and wash your face, maybe here's one over here that you can distribute. If you brush your teeth, you wash your face, like simple activities you might be doing every morning, then take these and give them to everybody. Make them a center for everybody to have. And I just put these five there on this list to give it to you because they're just a treasure stone of Soto Zen Buddhism. But every tradition has. Like if some of you are familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh, he has huge amounts of, you know, gathas and verses to say. And the emphasis is different in different verses. Like some verses are, like in Thich Nhat Hanh's, they're mostly about like really generating mindfulness no matter what you do. And like these verses are just really about raising the attention to do the activity with everybody. Like you're aware that while you're brushing your teeth, you're actually aware of everybody who is living with you at this time and this instant and this planet. So it's kind of like an broadening the mind and gearing it towards liberation kind of verses. And then the verses I was talking about from the Avatamsaka Sutra are also really about just joyfully making whatever activities you do be of benefit to yourself and other people. And for that reason, I printed to you on the back or front, whatever you think it is, these list suggestions. So generally speaking, I'm not a list person. There are some people who really live with lists. You know, they have a list and then they do, you know, every day. And
yes, we've had this conversation.
We had this. And I live with a person like that. So I understand. I understand that for some people it's really important. It's not so important for me. But I really found, and Anipima, I guess, is maybe a list person. Through her teachings, I really learned, oh, it can be and is really important for some things to have a list. For example, and this I wrote on these papers, to have a list about people that you love easily, people where love naturally comes to you, where you like easily feel affection towards and love towards, to know those people. And then if you sit there, like, for example, let's sit there right now and think, who do you really love? And who loves you? And just see if somebody pops up. I see some smiling faces. That's so sweet. And there are some people, and Anipima suggested, which I found, wow, that happens. Some people have difficulty coming up with somebody. So she was suggesting that then think back of somebody who just genuinely gave a friendly help to you, or friendly word, whatever, like, you know, some uncle who gave you some helpful suggestion when you were a teenager and had difficulties with your parents, or, you know, some shopkeeper who really genuinely greeted you. You know, I mean, there are millions of examples every day, actually, of people just smiling at you, just don't want anything in return for them being kind to you. And sometimes it's just really difficult to see. So I'm suggesting this is happening. And so this list making alone is pretty helpful to, like, see, well, where is it happening and how do I experience it now? And if I don't see it, what's hindering me to see that? You know, what is it that I'm, you know, don't look at shopkeepers or anything, you know, like, or what is it that I feel closed? You know, that's any blockages, that's exactly also what we want to know. So it's not about, like, oh, I don't feel love, or I don't feel love towards anybody, I'm, like, totally ruined. It's more like, wow, how interesting, you know, what is it about me that I don't feel I feel loved? So in that way, this list is, making a list like that is really, really helpful, I found. And then, of course, a list towards neutral people would be interesting too, like to see who are we actually neutral towards. And I found when I made that list that it's actually not too many people I feel that neutral to, because there's always a slight sense of, oh, I feel sympathetic towards this person I could have a conversation with if the time would allow it, and it just doesn't. Or like, oh, I actually feel just ready to get away with this person and I don't even want to bother, and so I don't even notice them. So it's not that I'm that neutral, really. But sometimes some people really just pass you, you know, in the street or whatever. So, and there's sometimes people that do pass regularly, so I categorize those as neutral. Like Trader Joe's, those employers, they rotate very quickly, so you'll kind of like get only a short sense of somebody. So that would be considered neutral. And then, of course, there's a list of people that you have difficulties with, you know. And I don't go into that because that's probably for most of you pretty easy to come up with. You know, we all have our, know our boundaries and have, you know, like, difficulty, you know, facing this or that person, or know our limitation of being open in various situations. Those people, write them down and know them. And sometimes, you know, especially in the case of the loved ones, sometimes it's a pet, an animal that can be that person or that being that raises affection in you. So make those lists. Maybe right now, just consider. Close your eyes or whatever and consider again, who are the people you really love or feel loved by? And do you come up with a neutral person? And who is it that you have difficulty with? So now in this list making, I added two more suggestions for you on the bottom of these three list abilities, which is situations that you really delight in and situations that you're averse towards or you feel uneasy in. And especially the averse towards, that would be already part of the seed throwing, throwing seeds. If you already know, oh, I have difficulties when traveling, I feel really disoriented or whatever, or I have difficulties in supermarkets, or whatever it is that you already know. So you already can start making aspirations in a dry place, on a dry land, where you're not in the situation that you want to be anybody else, to be free of that suffering that happens to you when you're in those situations. Like you want anybody to be free of disorientation and on traveling, or you want anybody to be free of, you know, full, crowded, loud, noisy supermarket experiences, you know. And then if those wishes are generated, if you can relate to those lists, this list in this way on dry land, so to speak, in your meditation cushion or, you know, before you approach the situation, whatever, remember to generate a loving intent, then there is a possibility that if you enter a hell realm, that in that hell realm, a certain seed of compassion can come up, a certain wish for liberation for yourself and other beings can come up. So it's kind of a consciousness, consciously laying down the propensity for compassion, the compensity to change your reactive pattern of either aversion or confusion or aggression, to, you know, be intimate with those propensities and lay a different track, laying down different reaction chains by the wish of wanting just to be open to what's your life offering. And I want to stop here because I do want to know what you think about all of this. I mean, this is just what I was thinking. And I know, especially in the end about lists, that this is, you know, you might have enough to do in your day and you didn't want to sign up for this. So I want to hear what you have to say toward that and how you think about it, and maybe have even an improvement to offer. Yes.
First read the verses,
mm-hmm.
and I really like them. I see how they condition me to be generous. And then I read the list things. I didn't like them. Because I realized as I looked at these that everybody I know appears in every one of the lists.
Appears what?
On every one of the lists. So.
Oh, they overlap.
Oh, yeah. So a person who evokes tender heart and I feel love without difficulties will also be a person that I meet who I have difficulty with.
I noticed that too in my lists.
Back and forth.
Yeah.
And I realized what the difference is. This may go to another definition of suffering, is that when I approach a situation from the standpoint of being self-centered, I suffer.
Mm-hmm.
When I approach a situation from the standpoint of being generous or compassionate, I don't.
You don't suffer.
I don't suffer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No matter what happens.
Okay.
But it also depends upon how much I'm practicing before a situation arises that will often condition which way I go.
Yes.
And I find, especially if I'm in a good place, that I will slowly drift into self-centeredness and not even realize it,
mm-hmm.
until my pleasure is disturbed.
Right.
So how I feel is not necessarily the index of whether I'm being compassionate or anything like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to talk about feeling either.
No.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think at one point I thought I heard you say that, yeah, we can feel really good about things if we adopt this business, but sometimes I've been in my absolute worst feelings and I've had greater compassion than when I felt really good and solid.
Right. I wonder if you were good or whole. Was it about the bodhisattva asking about which action would be? I don't know exactly when you heard, but here we go. You want the clarification that it's not, suffering is not in the feeling realm of like feeling good or feeling bad or whatever, and genuine goodness is not in the feeling realm of feeling good and bad. Yeah, we agree on that.
Yeah, but
and it's easy to boil down to that because that's the largest indicator we have.
Yeah, and it's easy for me to feel like I'm being compassionate when I feel really good.
Right,
I'm
right.
So generous, you know, I'm just on top of the world.
Right.
I'm glad to give you some of this.
All right.
But the other thing is that when I have been in a condition of illness, say, which is pain, maybe, not suffering, I can take a stand of still being generous of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people in great suffering be that way with me, people who are dying of cancer in great pain, who sincerely want to know how I'm doing.
Mm.
That's an amazing thing.
Right.
So it has to do for me whether I'm being self-centered, taking, or whether I'm being generous and compassionate, willing to give under any circumstances. And that really determines how people come up with the list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I want to add something to it. That list about people who you feel loved by, sometimes I heard the instruction also in order to generate that genuine love that you want to offer the world, you know, that's not bound to feelings. Sometimes it's a great exercise to take this list of all the loved ones you ever knew, and if they're like 30 years ago, and imagine them in front of you. And then imagine them, how they look towards you and look at you with love and send you the best wishes of well-being, of ease in your body, of compassion towards you, and you're just sitting there and receive. And I'm mentioning it because Johnny was just like trying to make this comparison between self-centeredness is taking and, you know, and giving is a good one. Actually, it's very good to just sit there and receive. And it might look selfish from outside of like, what are you doing? You just, but how can you give if you can't receive? One has to be able to receive love. If you and you don't know how to receive love, how does your person who you want to give love should do, right? What should they do, you know? You can't ask anybody to do something that you can't do. So, start by yourself. We start receiving love, being able to receive love. And the love has been already given to you in this life, like your mom fed you, you know, raised you. It's a huge job. It's a big job. And to receive that, you know, of course there were mistakes, and yet there was just good things, many good things. And to be able to receive that and be grateful for that, and out of that, one can turn around and give it to other people. Yeah?
Well, I have one correction, is that I think there's a difference between being willing to receive and expecting to take.
Is that a correction or an offer?
In terms of what I was saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think being open to receive without expectation is fine.
Right.
But when I walk into a situation expecting to get something,
right,
that's different. That's
Yeah, we feel it right away if you do. Yeah. I agree. Yes.
There's times when I feel stuck, and I just, which is suffering, and I'm aware of it, and I can do some things to feel a little more spacious, and have a little more room, and a little bit of ease. So I like those practices, but what I especially like about this
wish that other people will experience that same kind of ease. And that's another nice space to create.
Mm-hmm.
Energy to put out.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, it does immediately. In the novel, so I'm thinking about my practices where you know I can feel a little less suffering. This is another small step that actually connects me with other people, whether they're right next to me or whether they're not with me at all.
Right.
So I appreciate it.
Well, thanks. Well, I am open to you not appreciating it because I confess that many years I did not. I found that like too much work to do, you know, and too tedious. And I found, and I'm sitting here talking about these practices, especially in addition to this nice, simple cut meditation practice of sit on the cushion, face a wall, and don't do anything else. Because there is something about cause and effect that's so real. I mean, it's as real as the breath you're taking in right now. I mean, there's cause and effect, there's a beginning and the end, and we don't know it completely. We can't really get a hold on it. We can't just say, okay, I'm doing this practice for the next 24 hours and then my difficult conversation the day after will be totally fine, you know. I mean, our most efforts are, you know, put in the mix and then other things happen and we don't know what, you know, there's a certain magic about our life.
I just wanted to say that I really relate to the word you used to develop the propensity.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the habits of mind that I have that create suffering, I don't even have to like them. They're so familiar that if somebody just suggests, well, just think differently, it's like, no, I don't want to. I want to think this way.
Right.
And so it really takes a lot of time, I think, to erode or rewire or whatever it is. Just, you know, slow, like even if it feels silly, you know, like I tend to think, oh, it's silly, but I still have ways that I do it.
Right.
Maybe a breath practice or a relaxation or a turning of a negative thought about a person to a positive.
Right.
And then when you least expect it, you might be surprised
by
this, oh, what was that? Well, it's this other reaction that comes out of what I don't know.
Right.
Because what I do know is the habit. What I don't know is this other thing that feels so awkward at first.
Right.
So I think there's part of it is like what you're pointing at, is just the simple learning process of being human.
Yeah. I mean, we do have these propensities that are already driving us. And some of them I was like really trying to find out what it is that I always do such. And it was like years go by and I don't know what, you know, it's like. And sometimes I want some things and I don't know why that either, you know. And like you said, we like to stay in a certain explanation realm to make things run. But like, for example, this example, Patrick, and I take your example of, you know, you want to do this and you don't want to do this, but you feel you have to because it's a propensity to come on Wednesday nights for years. And so to like, you know, do something else and you don't know why. You know, sometimes I had these like miraculous situations of, you know, I want to go get an ice cream and I hate ice cream, right, or whatever. And it's whatever blocks away. And I don't know why, and it doesn't make any sense, but somehow it's so strong, so I do it. And then on the way, I meet somebody who needs something or whatever, and at the end, the ice cream wasn't even there, but something else unfolded. But for me to get out of my house was an important thing to do. And so we can't sometimes know why we want something. You know, we might want something, it feels so absurd, but actually it's a stone for something else that we just don't see. So there's certain I think there's a certain trust for us needed to like open up and make a step into the open. It can be really difficult at times, but it's so refreshing if you do it. Yes.
I wasn't sure with the three types of people, and I think it's really, they're mixed together often. But, and we put them in these categories, but then was there a practice to do after you kind of categorized?
Thanks.
Like, just be aware of it, what you're saying? Or do you, then do you actually start working with the difficult ones in some way?
Yeah, so...
after you have the lists.
Yeah. But what I brought it up, to not make things too complicated, was just the main intention to really be aware of it, because I found it helpful to... have this kind of like kind of my already existing mandala colored, you know? It's kind of a coloring of what's already happening a little bit, and to know that the people we love are also the people you have difficulties with was a big insight, you know, like, whoa, what's going on? And then yes, that the major traditional instruction is to continuously like starting off with oneself, believe it or not, in all these teachings, but we think we shouldn't be selfless, there's a wish to start with ourselves, to practice loving kindness. We start loving ourselves first. Traditionally, we start loving ourselves and our teacher first. So these two, and nobody else. And then you add those, you know, once you're stable with that, because these are the, you know, ones who deserve it the most, first of all, in the cause of liberation. And then you add this list to it. And then, so wishes of love would be traditionally of like, may I be at ease, may I have well-being, may I be healthy, may I feel nourished, may I, you know, be free of fear, you know, very traditional wishes of well-being. Or if you're in pain or you're having a hard time, then the traditional wish is, may I be free of pain, you know. Like talk, like a self-talk of like, I see you're really having a hard time right now, and may you be free of it. And most traditionally even it's like to breathe in the pain and to breathe out ease. Breathe it in and breathe out ease. Like to really take the pain in and accept it. That's like the main part of compassion. To accept it and then to let go of ease. And so when that is stable and one can really do that with oneself or one's teacher, very at ease, then you go into those three lists traditionally, starting with the ones you love, going over to the neutral person, and then extend it to the difficult people. And so that would be a commitment practice. That's something to, you know, if you call to make a commitment to practicing every day a little bit. You can include it into your sasana period. Nobody's coming around hitting the stick if you don't do non-thinking. And develop these abilities and this layer of loving kindness and compassion. And those who are actually more of a wanting a more dogmatic or different flavor, I can tell you that these practices lead to liberation straight ahead. They do lead you to the inside of emptiness. And if you resist that idea, then it would be interesting to just really look into what makes you resist it. Because they do. So it's absolutely help you to attain liberation. So like the Buddha in the hell realm, that one moment of compassion brought him to be the Buddha, which now we are walking in his teaching realm. We are walking in the pure realm of Shakyamuni Buddha. We are benefiting from his insight right now. This very moment of sitting together right here. It's due to Shakyamuni Buddha, one day in the Kali realm, having a moment of compassion. So it's a huge effect. So thank you very much. I hope to meet you at tea. Being Sanam Palas.
Buddha.